As part of our Breaking the Mould Leading Edge Group podcast series, I'm here this morning with John Seward. John is an international specialist in developing business markets with over 30 years' experience in the international food and drink sector with leading global companies. Good morning, John.
Morning, Joe.
John, when you were studying for your food science degree in University College Cork in the 1970s, what were your goals and aspirations then?
I always knew I wanted to grow. And I wanted to learn. So very early on, I knew I wanted to do another degree. I didn't know what it was. Initially, I thought about science. And I wanted to travel. So as soon as I got the opportunity, I did nearly three years in Ireland. As soon as I got the opportunity, I left. Even though it wasn't actually in the line of work that I was used to. And I probably wasn't skilled enough for it. But I was anxious to grow, and I couldn't see growth in Ireland. There wasn't the economic growth, and there wasn't the developmental growth for people. We didn't have the educational system for further development. So as soon as I could, it was actually the first opportunity, I took it. And I was lucky, I suppose.
But was that there even before you went to college, or was it something that just developed in your own mind?
I like travelling. At least I used to like travelling. I always thought it would be interesting to see other parts of the world and see how other people did things. And secondly, there was just this thing about being a bit different.
And what has, since then, before we talk about your international experience and all of the markets that you've been involved in, what's driven you as from a professional perspective? What's made you tick?
I always like to make things a bit better, whether it's people or the infrastructure or the environment. And I suppose if you were to take the old West Cork things, you'd like to leave things a bit tidy. Just make them a little bit better than you found them. And you can't change the world. Nobody can significantly, at least not in the short term. But you can make a lot of changes to the places around you. And you do that generally by bringing management or discipline, whichever you want to call it, or governance, actually, I'd say, is a more appropriate word, and by giving people skills. If you train people and give them values, and they live with those values, and they're good values, then you'll see a lot of progress. And then when you leave, you can look back on something and say, we did as good as we could. It may not be perfect, but we left things better than we found them.
Very good. Now you've worked in, and forgive me if I guess somebody's wrong, but you've worked in Ireland, you've worked in the UK, USA, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Pakistan, Nigeria, Turkey, and actually currently, which our listeners I know will be interested in, Iran. But what type of roles, John, did you hold in those companies and those markets?
The very early days in Saudi, I went out as a van salesman. So I was on a truck selling butter and cheese and milk. And I did that because there wasn't the job I was supposed to go for. It hadn't worked out that way. The factory wasn't built. And they said, why don't you sell the stuff instead of making it? Now, at the time in Ireland, salesmen wouldn't have been that highly regarded. Later on in my career, I found that they're actually the most valuable people in any organisation. But back then, you got half the salary as a salesman as you would as a production manager. So when I went out to Saudi and started driving a van and I had a card saying sales rep, I never told my mother because I knew what she had said. I sent you to university for 4 years and got a job as a salesman. But within a year, I was sales supervisor and then I was operations something and then I was general manager. So, and after that, I just seemed to slot in as general manager or managing director in different roles and in different countries.
And was it intentional to move into different markets, into different developing markets as part of your career, or did that happen per chance?
I wanted to get into different areas. I always had this view that unless you understand the business end to end, you don't have to know every detail of it, but unless you understand the business end to end, you're always out of your depth in some area, whether it's finance or people or manufacturing, or sales, or marketing. So know a bit about it. And the word I use, I borrowed from somebody. Know enough to be dangerous, I suppose. And that's what I wanted to do. So as soon as I could, after Saudi, I went back to university to do a graduate degree. And I picked business this time, because I thought I better understand these GDP things, and these process improvements, and cash flow, and things I didn't really get. And to some, probably still don't in some cases. And that was part of it. And then the second thing was get jobs in areas that you don't understand. So go to the difficult pieces. If you look at a company or an issue, go to the hardest piece at the start and get into that and try and understand it. And then you'll figure out whether you can actually fix it or not. And sometimes you can't. There are problems that you can't fix. You just have to work your way around them. But if you understand that, then you can make progress. So the whole thing for me was about developing myself. And I can remember when we went to Stanford, it wasn't cheap. And I thought, if I could spend this money now and buy a couple of houses in Ireland, which you could do, wouldn't that be better? And talking to my wife, Noreen, she said, why don't we just invest in yourself? And that's what we did.
Excellent. Now, from an Irish perspective, obviously a lot of people worked in Mastock, the company established by the McGuckin brothers. And they had a brand called, a product called Almarai. Almarai became, or has become, an iconic food brand across the Gulf States. So what were the key achievements when you were, John, working there as general manager of Almarai in the development of that business?
We needed development, we needed distribution, and the route to market didn't exist at the time. We had a chilled product. There was plenty of dry distribution, ambient, and this is ambient temperatures over 50 degrees in the summer, so there was plenty of dry and there was plenty of frozen, but we couldn't get chilled distribution. So the idea today would be find a couple of distributors or wholesalers who can handle chilled products, give it to them, monitor them, and you know they can do it for you. Or you can go the direct route. And we had no option but to do that. And we figured out very early on how to get distribution at a relatively low cost. So we were building little sales centres that we could throw up in a week with two or three refrigerated containers and a porta cabin. And that would get us into a new territory. Bear in mind, this business was growing between 50 and 100% per annum. We needed distribution. Now, in terms of market penetration, we didn't know that at the time, but we were actually doing a great job on that as well. The second thing was consistency of the product. We had a great quality product. There was never a question about that, but we weren't always consistent. And that needed investment. We didn't have any cash, so the investment was kind of hard. So we had to take a few risks, particularly on the big infrastructure projects. Now, big infrastructure back then was $25 million for a processing plant, which is great if you have the 25 million, but when you only have about $5, 25 million is hard to come by. And again, this was confidence. We had to go to large suppliers, large contractors, and persuade them to trust us as a bunch of 25, 26-year-olds. And they did. So we must have impressed them enough in some way, because I think they, in the technical terms, in terms of market share and numeric distribution, weighted distribution, brand equity, they probably understood it a lot better than we did. We just knew that if you got good stuff out there, kept the cost down, gave consistent product and good service, you'd sell a lot of stuff. We didn't have the technical terms for it at the time.
Now, you're currently working in Iran. Are there any opportunities for European food companies in this market?
It's a difficult time for Iran at the moment because the sanctions are still in place, although they're trying to lift them. And as a result, export into Iran is difficult. It's difficult to get the cash. And as well as that, the country is harbouring its resources and doesn't really want to waste them on things that it can make itself. The second thing that you'll find with sanctions, and I've seen this in a lot of countries, African countries in particular, and some South Americans, they develop their own internal supply chain and mechanisms very quickly. And even though the sanctions are removed, a lot of people have vested interests in keeping them there. That would be the internal people. It's not just the external people. If I've just built a factory making a product and I'm protected by a sanction, you cannot import product A because of the sanctions, and I'm making product A or an imitation of it, I don't want to give that up. So that's going to be an issue in Iran for a while. There's a lot of internal investment that really wouldn't always want to see the sanctions lifted. Or if they did, it would be selectively. So we'd love to have aeroplane technology, but we don't want cheese. We'd love to have computer software, but we don't want meat products because we can make our own just fine. So there'll still be a bit of protectionism. It's a very, very well-educated workforce out there. It's a far more sophisticated country than a lot of people give it credit for. And they're good at doing stuff themselves. So if you're going there, find something that you can manufacture within the country and then invest in it yourself. And that will give you, or else buy a company out there. They're very keen on that. And thirdly, be a bit sceptical about what you see out there. There's very little market data. So far, we've been gathering our own market data, and it's totally different from anything that's available on the world scene. So what I'd say is, take it easy, find something that can be manufactured, and find something that you're better at than anybody else. Then you can go in there and have some chance.
Very good, John. And finally, what are the key takeaways, learnings from, you know, your experience, which spans over 30 years in business? If you have to distill it all down.
Learn to listen and take out what the other person is saying, not just for the sake of listening. And it's a kind of a bit of a corny phrase, some people would say, but if you listen with your heart instead of your head, listen to what they're not saying a lot of the time. You know, they're not saying I have a problem with my boss because they're afraid that it'll go back and hit them. They're not saying I have a problem with my husband or my wife because they're afraid to disclose that, but that's what they're not saying. When you've done that and you get good people, there's a very simple formula I've used over the years if you want to see if a business can work or not. You have the people, you have the infrastructure and the systems. The infrastructure is the tools, whether it's trucks or factories or computers. The systems are the ability to measure something. And the systems can be as simple as, if I buy it for 5 pence, I have to sell it for 10 pence to stay in business. That's a very simple one, and I've seen it used. I saw it used in a pie company in Atlanta. If you make it for $1, sell it for $3. They're three crucial parts. If you have bad infrastructure and you have great people, you'll get around it. If you have poor systems and great people, you'll get around it. But if you have weak people, the other two won't ever compensate for them. And after that, you get those three right. You could probably, at that stage, say you could overlay most strategies on top of them. And strategy, people love talking about it, and because it's so nebulous, everybody has an opinion on it. But strategy, you could pick 10 strategies and probably 9 of them would work. It's the execution of those strategies that makes the difference. There are some breakthrough strategies, no question about that. But the majority of them have probably been tried in other places or in other industries or in other forms of business. The military is very big on strategy, and that's where most people learned strategy. But execution, and there was some work, I can't remember the university in the US now, did a great piece of work on this, which said 95% of strategies failed because of their execution, not because they were bad strategies. And that brought it home to me that whatever you do, execute it well and be prepared to change and be prepared to adapt and be flexible. But for God's sake, go out there and try and do the best job you can on the execution side.
Well, John, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you this morning. I think I would regard you as a pioneer in establishing developing markets in the food and drink sector. And you're most definitely a credit to your alma mater in University College Cork. So thank you, John, for taking your time out from your vacation.
Thank you very much, Joe. God bless.